I don't know about all that, but thank you. I'll send you the check later.
I will cancel that check. I mean every word I'm saying.
Hey,
I don't know why I'm whispering. It's kind of weird.
I know. It's a little creepy. That's okay.
I don't even know which direction we're going in on this, because I have no idea how either of you feel about this record.
Oh, well.
Oh, well, you're going to learn.
Treat, wouldn't we?
Yeah, well, I made a spreadsheet, so I'll tell you.
We saw it.
That tells me nothing, because you make spreadsheets about everything.
I know.
I bet you have a record of your toilet breaks in the day.
Hello, I'm Jason Donzis.
I'm Ian Rice.
And I'm Sean Hillman.
And welcome to Ridiculous Rock Record Reviews, a podcast where we discuss and review a rock record of our choice. Today, we are going to be discussing the 2022 record from American rock band Spoon, Lucifer on the Sofa. Ian, I hold you personally responsible for my exposure to this record, so why don't you kick it off and tell us how you came across this band and this record?
I'm still having a hard time figuring it out if that's a good thing or a bad thing for you, but Spoon is a band that I kind of was loosely familiar with until I picked up a record of theirs called Gaga, 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 which has probably their most well-known song called The Underdog on it. And from there, I kind of just followed them. And when Lucifer on the Sofa came out in 2022, I immediately picked it up. And this was on the State of Mordica podcast, which obviously I'm one of the hosts of.
Get your bingo board out.
We did our albums of the year for 2022. And this was by far, hands down, my pick. I love this record. I just, it's one of those. And it's I find it to be more rare as the older you get, but it becomes few and far between the records that truly fully suck you in. And this is one of them. And I still listen to it regularly to this day.
I'm about as new to Spoon as you could get. I think I heard of them before, and I think I heard one or two songs, although I'm looking at the song list and I don't know which one it was. So this was a new experience for me too, which is part of the reason I jumped right on it. I'm glad for this show and to kind of branch out and discover new music. And, so my time with Spoon has been limited to this record so far, and I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, I got to admit, my first time I ever heard of this record was listening to that very bonus episode where David and Ian reviewed their top records of 2022, and this record came up, and I checked it out. There was also, if you go back to the original R4 Patreon, Aaron used to do these lists where it was like the four songs you need to hear, and somebody put a Spoon song on one of theirs. I think it was Wild, if I remember. Was it yours, Ian? Yeah. Okay. So that makes sense. So that was the other place I had heard the song, and I thought, man, this really kind of seems like it fits in my wheelhouse. So I listened to the whole record and that's how I was first exposed to it. So I was kind of surprised to learn that this was a band that actually had been formed and been putting records out in the 90s as a big 90s rock fan. I'm surprised that I missed it, that I overlooked it. And I will fully admit right now, before we even start the review, I haven't gone back to check that older stuff out. I don't know. Whatever those things you just talked about in your introduction, I don't know those songs. I don't know those records. I probably should at some point go back. I thought this was a newer band, and it comes to find out this is their 10th record. So we're a little late to the party, Sean.
That's all right. Was it Don't You Ever? Was that the big hit like a few years back, Ian?
That was one of them, yeah.
Yeah. That's probably the one I heard. So
it's a great tune from a great record.
I'm not the only one here, just like Jason, kind of new. So fun times ahead.
So hopefully you guys that are listening to this right now will give this a chance and take a listen. And one of the things we do definitely want to do, obviously, our most popular episodes are always going to be, AC/DC and Led Zeppelin and stuff like that. But we're also trying to expose the world to good rock and roll, especially current rock and roll, as well. We want to have a good balance. So this is a modern day band. These are guys that are doing it right now. As we said, this was released in 2022. So hopefully this will, just perk some ears a little bit. So with that said, let's talk a bit about this record. So as I mentioned, this is released in 2022, specifically February of 2022 on Matador Records. This is the 10th studio album, as I mentioned. So Lucifer on the Sofa was nominated for the Best Rock Album at the 65th Annual Grammy Awards, which was at the end of 2022. It was on the Wikipedia. Today is a hot mess. Oh, I forgot to mention. Oh, by the way, I'm trying to find all this stuff on Wikipedia, which is a hot mess for this particular record. I don't see that it ranked anywhere on any particular charts. I see all the critical reception. I don't see any chart. This was recorded, and this is an interesting story because it was recorded in between Austin, Texas and Los Angeles, California. It got a couple of different producers on here. Basically, for some quick background, I did watch a couple of interviews. The idea was that they wanted to get back together and record a record live in studio, kind of going back to that live in the room band sound. So they decided to do that in Austin, Texas. The specific studio that they were working with was called Public Hi-Fi. They also recorded in the Catacomb, which is in Austin, Texas. And the idea was that in order to get all the guys in the room in the band, in fact, several guys actually moved to Austin to do this. But the recording started in late 2019, and everybody knows what happened after that. You know, this was a pandemic hit, and their goal of being live in the studio kind of got derailed because that wasn't a thing during the pandemic. And so they sort of dispersed a little bit, and it caused a major delay. So there are some tracks that were recorded in Los Angeles, basically parts of tracks that were recorded in Los Angeles, but they basically waited out the pandemic intentionally to do the live in the room band situation. So while this started recording in 1999, they didn't finish it until 2021 because they really wanted to have that in the room sound. Mentioned that it was released on Matador Records. It's produced by the band with also some other producers involved. Mark Rankin is the primary producer. And then you have Dave Fridman and Justin Raisin producing a couple specific tracks. When we get to who's in the band, this is where we were making fun of. I made a spreadsheet because in order to get all the parts recorded, there was a lot of situations where basically these guys in this band are all multi-instrumentalists. So they play guitar, they play bass, they play percussion, and there's a lot of moving around of parts. And so I'm going to tell you the names of the primary players, but as we kind of go through each track, I'll kind of tell you who's doing what because they move around a little bit. So your main players in the band are specifically Britt Daniel. He's the vocalist. He's credited with vocals on all tracks. He plays electric guitar. He plays bass guitar. He plays acoustic guitar. He does some hand claps. He plays some keyboards. He's on percussion and he's on Mellotron. We have Jim Eno, who's on drums pretty much all the tracks, also added percussion on a few tracks we'll talk about. We got Alex Fischel. He's on electric guitar on a bunch of tracks. He also plays piano. He plays keyboards. He plays melodica. And he's also on the ARP Selena, which is it's like a synth. And then we have Gerardo Larios, electric guitar, bass guitar, piano, hand claps, organ, bass drum. And then we have Ben Trocken on bass guitar on a bunch of tracks. There are some other musicians that we'll mention as we see fit. And as far as who wrote all these tracks, again, that gets a little bit dicey. We'll have to talk. Pretty much Britt Daniel is the primary writer of all these tracks. There are some additional writers that we'll mention as we go. But Britt Daniel mostly wrote the majority of these tracks.
I found your chart highlights, Jason.
You got a chart for me?
I got a chart for you. This got as high as number 4 on Billboard's independent albums of 2022, number 4 on Billboard's U.S. top alternative albums of 2022, and number 4 on Billboard's U.S. top rock albums of 2022. And if the listeners at home think all of those Billboard charts sound kind of intertwined with each other, I agree. And coincidentally, number four in all of them. So they may be the same. I don't know. It's Wikipedia, folks. Take it with a grain of salt.
There you go.
That did pretty good here, though. Number seven for UK independent albums of 2022. Yep. So not bad.
The other thing we got to start recognizing is one of our biggest listening groups actually is in Australia. And so just for you Australian guys, this reached, from what I see, 41 on the Australian chart.
Hey, do you guys like koalas? I'm just trying to appeal to
the
audience.
There goes all our Australians.
I was just trying to appeal to our fans.
All right, now that we've fumbled along all the details of this record, why don't we get into a track-by-track analysis? And we are going to start the proceedings off actually with a cover originally written by a gentleman named Bill Callahan, which is called Held.
Like the way this song starts off, and then as that kind of like pre-song chatter, and kind of, it's almost like studio chatter in a way. I think it's a very relaxed introduction to a record. Like you expect a lot of records to start like with some kind of bombast or something immediate, and it's kind of peters its way in. And there's something about, there's two guitars playing on the main kind of, it's not really a riff, but the main progression. And they're kind of an octave off of each other. And I kind of like the way that those two guitars sound together. And this also, throughout the course of the song, there's these atmospheric kind of elements, sounds, you know, whether it be guitar sounds or other instruments. And as the song is building dynamics, those atmospheric sounds kind of build with the song. I think this is a really cool start. And this is what sucked me into this record when I first heard it. I thought this was very unique in its sound, even for Spoon.
I wonder what the album would have been like if the whole thing was recorded with the band together, what it would have sounded like, as opposed to starting like this, the live, everybody in the same room, and then ending up feeling like a very compartmentalized album put together by individuals in their own studios. I was very encouraged by the way this record started. I too noted that it's everybody in the room together and you're just kind of a fly on the wall in the studio. I thought it was cool. They started off with a kitschy but catchy guitar riff and obviously done in the setting of Austin, Texas. I didn't know this was a cover song until I saw somebody's spreadsheet today, which was cool. But the whole album in general, I think, is supposed to have kind of a biographical feel to it. And they wanted to record it purposely in Austin, I think, as Jason said. There's a little bit of a dirty break at about 2:38, takes us to momentarily flight before descending just as quickly 50 seconds later. I let the ants cover me.
Yeah.
it wasn't overdone and maybe even ad-libbed, which made me like the song a little bit more. I think this is one of the longer tracks on the album, and good for slow cruising the breezy streets of Austin at night in your convertible. Number 39 on the Portuguese albums list.
As we mentioned, yes, this is a cover by a gentleman named Bill Callahan. I didn't know that until I was listening to an interview. Actually, it was on Apple Music. There's a little like interview bit on there. And apparently this was a cover that they played pretty regularly in their live sets, but had never recorded it. And then when they all came together in Austin to start the recording sessions, they were kind of jamming and they played this track, and the producer had heard it and said, you know what, we should record it. So anyway, so they were in the studio and they played this track, and they decided they should record it. So as far as I can understand in the story, they played it once. They liked how it turned out, and then they hit record and they played it again. And part of what Ian was talking about is you can hear what I assume is Brit. I don't know well enough, but not only the little banter at the beginning as it kind of falls into the song and the groove, but even in the middle of the song, you can hear him go like, let's play this twice as long.
Yeah.
And he kind of cues it, you know, twice as long, and then they move into the change. I like how he calls out that timing. The riff figure is nice. It's a nice repeating pattern that's over this heavy groove. There's not really a chorus per se. I like though how the vocals kind of line up. This is a new thing I never paid attention to before. This is Joe Winter's fault. Joe Winter's drummer for the Steepwater Band. Because he talked about, a lot of people talk about how the drumming of the groove and being slightly behind the beat and how it's synced up with the bass. That's kind of when you talk about the rhythm section, it's mostly like drums and bass. But Joe specifically talked about how the snare bit and how it hits with the rhythm guitar is a huge deal. Mm-hmm. And in this song, there's a lot of points where like his vocal annotations line right up with how the drum beat goes. And then that snare hits and he changes. And that's, I never paid attention to that before. And now I hear it all the time. And I'm just like, oh, that was it. That was awesome. So I really dig how they line all that stuff up. Oh, I like the keys at the end. There's not a real chorus to this song, which is really weird. But it's a nice little groovy story. I'm not a huge fan of like basically like the talking-ish vocal, but it works for this type of song. So I dig it. I'm not so sure how much a cover to open your record is a good idea, but it works. And as has come up here, like if you didn't know it was a cover, you wouldn't know. This sounds like them. And it works as an opener. Just so everybody knows on this particular, because again, I mentioned the personnel is a little bit of a moving target. So on this particular song, Britt Daniels, primarily your vocalist, is going to be vocal every time. In this case, he's on bass guitar, while Gerardo is on electric guitar, and Alex is on piano. And he also plays some keyboard. So he's doing a little bit of both piano and keyboard in there. And then you've got John on drums. So this is a little bit, the biggest switch is Britt, who a lot of times plays the electric guitar. He's on bass this time. But I like the groove and I like how it comes together, and it works as a good opener. So we're off to a solid start, in my opinion. Which then brings us into the first actual single that was released from this record, which is called The Hardest Cut.
Took off in the dead of night, but before you did, got your hair combed right. Yeah, the neighborhood watch knows the score, and they're knocking at your door. Let them knock some more. They're saying you need a little protection. Worldwide, see your mind.
number 74 on the Spanish albums chart. The Hardest Cut, another live track. This kicks off the count off. The Hardest Cut was a lead single off the album, as Jason just said, released in October 2021. The song has kind of a rockabilly low-key fuzz thing going on. It's very reminiscent of Chelsea Dagger by the Fratellis, which I'm partial to, being a Blackhawks fan, so I liked that callback. All in all, it's a song you can't help tapping your foot to. Nice guitar work around 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Here it come now, here it come now, here it is, the hardest cut. Doesn't overstay its welcome. So far, the record for me is 2 for 2. Number 47 on the Swiss Albums chart.
The really cool thing to me about this track is that main riff. There's that, like, I don't know how else to describe it, because even though I do play guitar, I don't know what the terminology is for this, but it's kind of like a downswipe he does on the one riff. And it's just, they come up with such interesting things, Spoon, and particularly Britt Daniel, like when he does guitar stuff, that even though, you know, you would tend to think, you know, there's only a limited number of chords, as, you know, rock's been around for however many years, they still manage to come up with stuff that's uniquely original. And I think that's great about them. I particularly like the lyrics on this song. There's one that, you know, I took off in the dead of night, but before I did, I got my affairs in order and my boots on. Like, it's just strangely off-center lyrics like that. I really enjoyed on this, and just the phrasing of everything throughout, kind of to what you were saying, Jason, about the way things line up together. Like, that's very much true of this song as well, I think.
Yeah, I agree. The choppy, fuzzy riff is memorable for sure. It's unique. There's nothing specifically that I could think of that would, it doesn't remind me of anything. It sounds very original. Like, they came up with it. I like the fun, funky groove. The vocal is great. I mean, you mentioned a couple of lyric bits. For me, I love that the piece where they say, where he goes, they say I need a little direction, and goes into that bit there. I like the really heavy guitar stabs that come after each chorus. That's a lot of fun. It's super heavy and effective and buzzing. And they double that up after the second verse. And then it goes into like a really weird solo bit that's through like some sort of effect. We are so not technical. It's pretty funny. It does this buzzy thing.
Really insightful.
It is, but it's cool. Yeah, it's cool. And this has three guys now. So going back to, okay, where are all the band members sitting at? So Britt again on vocals. Britt's also now, he's back on the electric guitar in this one. We got Alex on electric guitar, and we also have Gerardo on electric guitar with Ben on bass. So lots of guitar work going. I like how they layer it all in. And this is the point in this record where I was listening to it and I'm going, this is tickling all my little shoegaze itches.
Number 30 on the German albums chart.
All right. The Devil and Mr. Jones. How did it ever start? Do you feel the same? Mr. Jones.
Jones. The Devil and Mr. Jones. Okay, for even for someone like me with limited modern music exposure, and I'm working on that, kids, even I can't help but observe undertones of the revivalists and the war on drugs. And if you want to go back about 30 years, even the British rockers Talk Talk as this song takes off. It's another dirty and dark guitar strum, this time with some piano. That gets interesting. Then some baritone sax around the 250 mark.
Yourself to Helen.
Who Mr. Jones is and what he's selling. I'm thinking if the listener isn't careful, it may be them. Warning, kids, don't hang around the shady riffraff out there, lest you become one yourself. The song goes about 4.5 minutes, which for me was probably about a minute too long.
I really think this track, to me, reminded me a lot of some kind of like almost like a soul kind of vibe. The very clean guitar tone, the way the chords are played. But now that you're mentioning, Sean, like the revivalists and things like that, I could definitely see that. That didn't click with me all the times I've listened to it, but that's a very good comparison. I like this track. It kind of moves things along nicely. Like, it's not one of the top tracks for me of the record. I really like it, but it's almost a little disjointed in the sequencing where it falls between the hardest cut and the track after it. That's kind of what throws it off a little bit for me. This album, to me, overall, in a couple of spots, has a sequencing issue. But overall, I think it's a great tune.
I'm going to agree with the sequencing issue, and it's going to come into play later. And I think if we rearranged a couple tracks from the second side and split some of these up, it would have worked better. We'll talk about that when we get there. My big thing with this, I the things I like about it, first, nice poppy little groove like that. It's got a melodic vocal, lots of backing. So Brit, other than specifically, there's a lady named Caroline Rose who's backing vocals on the previous track, and she is backing vocals on track 10. But other than that, the only credited vocalist is Brit Daniel. So all of these layered harmony vocals, I assume, are just him harmonying with himself. And I do like it. It does sound very good, and he does a good job of differentiating himself enough where it works. I like the clean, jangly guitar in this. I like how it's just sort of a nice, fun little poppy song. My wife is a huge sort of sitcom fan. We watch all sorts of cheesy sitcoms. And one of them she watches all the time is The Big Bang Theory. And in that, one of the sort of little plot points that comes up in one season is Raj and Howard form this pseudo little band where one plays keyboard and one plays guitar, and they write a song called Thor and Dr. Jones.
Thor and Dr. Jones, Thor and Dr. Jones. One plays with lightning, the other plays with
And I can't separate the two songs. They're just, the one song is super cheesy. I'll drop it in. You can hear a clip of it, and I'll ruin this song for people forever. So
don't do it.
There you go.
Where would you guys put this? I'm sorry. Were you done?
Yeah, go ahead.
Where would you guys put this sequencing wise? Or do you want to talk about that later? You can talk about where.
Well, I would talk about it later because I think on the backside of the record, there's a little bit too much sameness in a sequence. I would move a couple of tracks from the backside to the front and drop. This would be one that I would kind of drop to the back end. It'll make more sense later, I think.
Fair enough. I would agree with you, Jason, if I can speak to that for a second, because mm-hmm. I feel like the second half of the record is like the mellow side and the first side is the more up-tempo side. And I think each side could benefit from tracks from the other being mixed in.
Yep.
I understand what you mean.
Totally agree. Totally agree. Just so everybody knows, Brit Daniel and Alex, again, on electric guitar and this, Ben on bass. We do have Alex plays both the piano parts and the keyboard parts. And what's specifically notable here is we have some organ from Gerardo. So again, though, you know, he's been on electric guitar up until this point. So lots of key heavy elements into this, but also some also heavy guitar. So we get a little bit of both. And then Britt adds some additional percussion as well.
Is Gerardo the Rico Suave guy?
Sean, what did I tell you about fooling around? Okay.
Find out.
Honestly, I don't know who any of these guys are. I've known this band for like 5 minutes.
You guys thought I was trying to be funny. That was actually a legit question.
Oh, is it? Maybe it is Gerardo.
Wouldn't that be funny if I was right the whole time? All right.
Sorry. Seems like they would have got
this whole lifetime would have been a joke. Okay.
Anyway.
We're in a simulation. I truly
believe. Yeah, we're in the Matrix right now.
Number 21 on the Scottish albums chart.
Anyway, so the one thing, though, with the sequencing that I do like is I like how the song ends with sort of this big sort of crescendo and then drops right into the next song, which is wild.
I was reminded every measure, riding trade winds, buried treasure. I got on fine with modern living, but must I be such a citizen? And the world still so wild, called to me.
Wild is the point in this record where the more electronic elements of Spoon's music kind of start to sneak back in. I know you guys are a little bit more unfamiliar with their entire body of work. And the last few albums before this were a bit more studio labored kind of affairs, particularly Hot Thoughts, which is the record just before this. And that's why they were trying to go back to a more live in the room kind of feel. But obviously the COVID situation, as we touched on, you know, made that a little impossible at times. So songs like Wild and a couple other tunes, you know, those kind of elements sneak back in. But this song, like several others on the record, has a really cool dynamic build where it starts at, you know, one volume level and just kind of they bring it up and bring it down. It's a skill that I feel a lot of people don't really give enough credit to, you know, cool dynamics. And it's always been something I'm very attracted to in songs. This song to me, though, the foundation of it is the piano. And it's almost like an anthemic thing, the piano in this track. Like that's what really draws me into it. And that's the hook for me. Like if you mention the title of this song, I will instantly hear the piano parts in my head. So I think this is a fantastic track and was a good track for the second single.
I got some more revivalist vibes here, too. I cross your legs, Ian. Don't get too excited. Also, a little bit of Radio Gaga, funny enough. And then there was something else quite a little familiar about this, and I couldn't quite place it. So I looked it up, and it says that they took the drum part from Judas Priest, Take on the World. We got a lot of hard rock educated listeners to this podcast, so I'm sure they're going to hopefully correct or corroborate that. But I thought maybe that was it. I wasn't sure. The song structure is pretty simple, mixed very well, that honors both guitar players plus the rhythm section and, to Ian's point, eventually piano. And except every time something is added, it does not take away from what we've already had. And too often I find myself listening to records and I get annoyed by the more stuff they try and add in, but it actually works here. I can identify with the lyrics here, too. The world is wild and my lifestyle may need to pump the brakes once in a while, but it's just so hard. Too much fun to be had out there. I ended up liking this song much more than I thought I would. Maybe my favorite on the record.
Yeah, I think this is another really good groove. I like the clean guitar as it starts. The chorus is really catchy, and I also like the keys under it. So from a musician standpoint, all three of our guys are on guitar on this. We got Britt, Alex, and Gerardo on guitar. Ben's on bass, and then Alex and Gerardo both add piano parts. So there is an added focus to the piano bit, which I think works really well. And I like how they escalate throughout the song. Like, it starts pretty basic: guitar, drums, bass, little bit of keys. But then as you move through the song, they add a layer, add a layer, add a layer. But it doesn't pile on each other. Like, they do a really good job of identifying the right space for all the instrumentation to come in. And I think Britt's vocals are amazing on this track. It's one of my favorite vocal deliveries that he has, especially like that part when he's like, you know, he starts off "and the world," and he's got like this raspy sort of harshness, like tiredness to the voice, but it works to tell the story of the song. Really, I really like that. And I like how after the second chorus, it just kicks full on in. Like, you've got, it sounds like nine different people playing instruments, and it probably is, because at this point they're overdubbing and they're adding all of the pieces on because they're not able to be in the room as much anymore. I like the little instrumental bit that comes in and then how it scales way back down and starts to rebuild. And for me, like, the last 30 seconds in particular of the song, as it kind of fades out, really gives me like U2 Acton Baby vibes. But all in all, I think this is a strong song. Yeah, this is one of the best songs on the record for me. I really dig it. So then that moves into what I think is the last single they released, My Babe.
But there you are, down somewhere we used to know. We used to go, trailing our focus on late night TV, cheap wine. Showing up late, then we'll work on a quarter time.
For something completely different, we have the airy, wispy piano and acoustic guitar strumming eighth notes of My Babe. After the last toe tapper, that's the second time I've used that phrase this episode. After that last song, this is a bit of a sit down and take a load off number. I enjoyed the elemental approach to the instruments here, complemented by the singer's pretty good Elvis Costello impression. More storytelling of long nights and lost loves in Austin. In the refrain, there was some tremolo effect in the guitar I found myself wanting more of. I did like how it stripped down a bit at about the minute 55 mark. Great production here again. Very clean, but not obnoxiously so. I can't say I won't skip this one when it comes up in my rotation down the road. You got to be in the right mood for this number.
I think Britt Daniel is at his best on guitar when he's playing acoustic guitar a lot of the time. It's a real strong point for him. And I love how in this particular song, the acoustic kind of intertwines with the piano at the beginning. And those two kind of, they breathe very well in the same space together. This is also towards something you had mentioned earlier, Jason, but because there's multiple guitar players on a lot of these songs and multiple instrumentation, there's kind of a thing that I always refer to it to the Keith and Ronnie syndrome, where Keith Richards and Ronnie Wood are playing guitar together, but they're playing almost like half parts sometimes just to complement what each other's playing and fit together nicely. And that's kind of what Britt Daniel does on this track with the acoustic and intertwining with the piano. And they kind of both breathe in that same space. And it really, it's really, really something very cool. And on this one, he's also harmonizing with himself. But I like the fact that one voice is like a half second behind the other one. So it's not perfectly in unison. I kind of again gives it that, whether it was or it wasn't, gives it that live in the room kind of feel. But yeah, definitely another great choice for a single for sure.
Yeah. So another unique lineup here. And I don't know if this is because of the COVID situation where they're trying to, you know, they have bass tracks and they're trying to fill it out. So on this particular track, Alex is the sole electric guitar player here. Britt's on the acoustic. As Ian mentioned, there's only two tracks on here, this record, that has an acoustic guitar. This is the first one, and Britt plays it. And then Gerardo is actually on bass on this one. And both Alex and Gerardo also play the piano. So it's really sort of like a three-man show to kind of compile this song between Alex, Britt, and Gerardo. They're playing essentially all of the parts except for the percussion bit, which is still John. But so I have to imagine that they did these parts at different points and layered them over each other. But what I like is that it starts very sort of simple, and the keyboard swell kind of brings it in, and it sets this sort of spacey, I say shoegazy mood. It's not quite accurate, because shoegaze specifically relates to guitar effects. Like, the whole term of shoegaze is like where you've got guys playing guitar, but they're looking constantly at their feet as they play with the pedals. But this has a lot of the same token elements of shoegaze, the spaciness of it, the groove that lies under it, while like the vocal is very mellow over it. So there's a lot there that tickles all those things, like I mentioned earlier. And I like that harmony. Ian, you described it perfectly. I had made that note too, which I assume is Britt harmonizing with himself, but he does it in such a way where you could easily convince me it's two different people that are singing those songs. His voice is not the same. How he does it, and the timing of it's a little different, and the intonation he uses on the different parts is different. And that's really, it's a really well done layered harmony vocal with himself. It's very good. And I like how when the drums kick in, like each section changes just a little bit. Like, it's not a redundant where the song's the same throughout. It changes as each part comes in, which makes it interesting as it moves along. I am all for a very repetitive, spacey, shoegazy thing that draws you into a trance. This is different though, because it layers different parts upon each other as it moves forward. Then when you get to like 2:32, there's a little melodic, I put in quotations that it's a solo, but it's not really. It's like this, I don't know what you would call it. It's a little musical movement. Let our hearts beat a time. Let the love go on and on now. My babe. The instrumentation kind of takes a little bit of a backseat, and you got a nice layered backing vocal, and it repeats the chorus there. And I just think the structure, how they built this song, especially, I can only imagine if they intended to go into a room and play live in a band, and then they couldn't. And now they're, you know, in some cases they're all still in Texas, and in some cases they're in LA, and they're trying to piece this all together. I think they did a really good job of building these different parts to make it sound like it could be all in a room. And the whole genesis of that in the first place was, again, I'm not familiar with the old Spoon catalog. But from what I read from interviews with this guy, is what they realized is they would build these records piece by piece, but then when they would go on the road and they play them live, they would, the live versions of what they played, they loved way better. And they got such a reaction from the crowd that then they were like, that we should just make a record as if we were playing it live. And then pandemic shot it all to hell. So the hybrid of the two, and again, kind of referencing friends of ours from the Steepwater Band, they had the same experience with Return of the Wheel when they were recording that. They fully intended it to be an in-the-room live situation and then had to alter it at the last minute and build it. And they were able to still make it sound like it was a live-in-a-room situation. And I think these guys did the same thing, and they did it really well. Even though it's really just, it's like three of the guys doing all the parts. And I really like it. All right, so we're going to lift the imaginary needle. We're going to flip the imaginary record over, drop the needle on. Feels all right.
Feels all right to me, standing here by myself. Photograph with no correction for me or anybody else. A thousand dreams nothing could measure up to being out here just needing nothing, living on no one else. I feel the night creeping, but we ain't sleeping.
I think Feels All Right. I like the verse riff on the guitar. It's very basic, very straightforward, but it's just something very likable about it. And Britt's vocal on the chorus also really draws me in. The drums, although they're nothing too complicated, they're just fun. They make the groove is just right on the drums. Like it you don't have to be overly complicated to be really, really good. And that's the case with this song. I also like the song that kind of cools down, becomes very, very almost atmospheric around the 145 mark. And then after it simmered down for a little bit, it just amps right back up. I just like that little break in the middle of the song. You can see
definitely a nice way to start the second side.
I like to do that on this record, kind of ramp up and come back down just as quick. It's fun. They don't overdo it. All right, it's time to get back up and groove. The pounding and complimentary guitar and piano instantly has Feels All Right, giving off action movie vibes. I got tastes of My Morning Jacket, Urge Overkill, and the Decemberists in here. And while I don't particularly go out of my way for those bands anymore, maybe I should get back to more of them, as this ended up being my favorite song on the album. Forget what I said about Wild earlier. This one's kitschy, but in a low-key way. Coincidentally, I'm trying to use the term low-key more to reach the younger hipsters out there. My son says that phrase all the time. Jason, do your kids say low-key? Or other various terms that I don't know what the fuck they mean.
Yeah, no, they come up and they look at my outfit and they're going, Dad, you're not very drip.
Drip.
What the fuck is that?
Drip.
Yeah. Yep. You're not very drip.
You don't have the riz.
Am I having a stroke? What's happening?
You
here?
Might be. I asked that same question a lot.
That's what it is. I'll Ian call him up here and he'll tell you. Anyway.
Number 47 on the Swiss albums chart.
There we go. Yeah, groove. Somebody said groove for days on this one. Love it. Little stabby guitar pits in there. I feel a night. Love the delivery. I love it's a little bit of funk, right? A little bit of funk in there. Love that. I like all the layers that build on each other. just so many little vocal. To me, the vocal carries this song. The groove lays the table for it, which is great. But the vocal delivery on this track in particular is probably my favorite, and how he sings this song. Just for perspective, so we have Gerardo. So this is probably another one that had to be pieced together a little bit, because Gerardo is on both electric guitar and bass guitar on this one. And then Alex is playing both the piano and the keyboard. So the primary instrumentalists in this are Gerardo and Alex, and then Britt fills it in with that electric guitar. And John's pretty much the stabilizer on the drums, but he also adds a little bit of Mellotron in this, which fills out the song. And so I had noted that same timestamp at 145, where they do the breakdown and it kind of spaces all out a little bit. I love all the little backing vocals stuff in this, the ooh, ooh, oohs, and there's a lot of stuff going on. And again, you know, the only backing vocalist that's credited is only credited on The Hardest Cut and then Lucifer on the Sofa, which we get to later. So I have to presume this is Britt doing this stuff, and it doesn't sound like him at all, how he's put this down. So I really appreciate it. And I agree. This is not my favorite song on the record, but it's up there. It's in my top. It's a fun way to start side two for sure. So that brings us to On the Radio.
They say, how come you still play that game, John Briggs? 'Cause I was born to it. Yeah, I know I was born to it. And you know all I'm looking for.
Opens with a little bit of a Rolling Stones feel. I think it could have been one of their later songs, until it falls off at about 26 seconds in. The song's got a lot going on. I end up liking the intro and then the break at 212, but every time it would come out of those and into the lyric with stripped down guitar hiding further and further in the back of the room, I found myself disappointed. The chorus each time does a good job pulling us out, but I don't know if it saves the number. I can't decide if I wanted the song to be longer or not on the record at all.
This song for me is what stops the album from being a perfect album. It's not necessarily a bad song. I just find it to be out of step with everything else that is on this record. And even though I am a considerable Beatles fan, I find the piano on this to be a little too obla-di, obla-da. And it kind of doesn't work with Spoon for me. Works perfectly fine with McCartney, but it doesn't really fit in this context for me. So this is the one. If I, you know, if you're going to label a song a skip song, this would probably be the one for me on this record.
So if I'm going to assume we have to put this song on the record, this would be one where I would probably move it up and maybe even open the record with it. And I don't disagree that it's not the greatest song on the record, but I feel like if you started the record with this, because I still think it's weird you start with a cover. If you started the record with this, then it would just get better as you go, right? And so I think that would be a candidate for that situation. I like the musicality of it. The riff that breaks in, the intro is very cool. It's when the vocals kick in and it starts to get really cheesy sounding. That's where I think they miss the mark there. And what's with the weird random shaker that's like off time? It seems like there's this random guy shaking a shaker at whenever he feels like it. I don't think the chorus is that great. I had noted the same timestamp at 212, where it starts to get a little intense and it starts to build up, and then the verse kicks back in and it's kind of like, that's not really the payoff I was looking for. So I agree. This is one of the low points on the record. I wonder again if it would have been better if it was a little sooner and we could have got it over with a little bit. And but we'll never know. So we move on. And we move on to the next track, which is called Astral Jacket.
God walks into the room softly. You feel it when you hear that sound. Oh, God talks, motions to you casually, motions to you blissfully. Oh, and if you let it in the blink of an eye, you can feel so fine. All track of time, time. In a blink of an eye, you can feel it. You can move it like divine.
Astral Jacket, most of the time, is my favorite track on this record. It starts a run on the second side here that is, you know, all kind of, I know I've used this term a bit on this episode, but it really is the perfect summation for what I hear it, in my mind, is a run of kind of very atmospheric songs. So this one has those little like doo-doo backing vocals that are very characteristic. You guys aren't as familiar, but they're prevalent on other known Spoon songs. So it's kind of a piece of familiarity. In all this, you know, that kind of harkens back to some of their, you know, older material. I like the part when he's singing in the blink of an eye. That's very, very lilting and soothing almost in a way. And the chorus, of course, on this is very, very catchy. This is just the atmospheric qualities of Spoon at their most potent. I really love this song.
Some would say low key even.
Yes. And Zip, what was it?
Drip. It's got
drip. That has to do with what the clothes you're wearing. That's not, you can't use it. I don't think it applies to a song.
Oh, I'm sorry. I learned the term.
I don't know. I have to check. I got to go with my 17-year-old up here. Can a song be drip?
Well, I don't know if it can be drip, but any song that features timpanis can't be bad. I was wondering if this was a song about God and faith for a minute. Now I just think it was about a heroin or an acid trip. Another stripped down song instrumentally with great mix and production, but the clean and well done instrumentation doesn't save it for me. Sorry, Ian. You may want to be careful and not operate heavy machinery while listening to this song.
Well,
low key.
It's low key kind of. Yeah. My notes say this, super spacey. There's a lot about this that I should love. I noted the timpani piece in the background is I don't know, like, do I like it? Is it disturbing? Is it a little abrasive? I'm not sure, but it's notable. It's there. I do like the layered vocal, the nice spacey layered vocal. It's a very nice melody. It sounds great. Nice backing vocals. Again, I assume Britt backing himself. Musician wise, there's no other than Britt with the acoustic guitar strum, that's it for guitars. Britt's also playing bass on this. And then Alex is on keys, and then John's back with the Mellotron. So gives you a little bit of how the song is structured. 134, they do this thing where like it's like a skip effect. I checked so many times to make sure like my phone was working correctly, that the song wasn't messed up. It does this like, it's like a doot doot, do, but like that cuts out while they do it. I don't know how to explain it, but I hated it. It ruined the whole thing for me. If I'm going to get into a vibe and a spacey situation with this song, like, don't do something that's going to abrasively pull me out of it. And I feel like that's what they did. With that little effect that they did. And then what's with the little harp thing at the end? I don't know what that is either. That was weird.
Atmospheric.
It was atmospheric.
Did you listen with headphones on?
I did, yes. And that was part of the problem because I was really getting into it. And then that the weird thing happened. But this is also where the sequencing situation comes into play, right? Because you have this song and it's going to go right into the next song. And I would have liked those songs to be split up. I don't think putting Astral Jacket and Satellite back to back was a good idea. Even if you split that up with one of those other little more high tempo poppy sort of songs would have laid out the mood a little better because it almost forced me to decide which one of these two songs I liked better. So I didn't like them back to back.
Interesting. I thought they were very intentional about putting them back to back and towards the end, but I don't know.
Why don't you tell us more about that as we move to the next song, which is called Satellite.
I'll be a satellite out here on my own. I know where you draw the line. I know what you draw it for. We used to walk that line. I know what you draw it for. You got them that love you. Got them that you adore. I see angels above you. But I know I love you more. I know I love you more. I know.
Let me tell you more about Satellite. I was excited. The intro had me wondering where we were going here. A heavy piano and single guitar ripping off, again, straight eighth notes. Some definite Pink Floyd meets Stranger Things kind of vibes going on here. So, who's dying? Is it a code for a relationship or is someone actually physically ailing here? Another trip, perhaps? I kept going back to Pink Floyd during this one, particularly during the guitar solo. I wonder what David Gilmour could have done with this bad boy. This was my sleeper. I mean that literally. I started yawning.
See, you just laid that all out like it was a good track, and then you...
I know. I reel you in.
Gosh, and you just pull the tablecloth out.
That was low-key abusive.
Low-key shady.
I would wholeheartedly agree with the fact that I think that these two songs should be split up, but it doesn't detract from my enjoyment of either one. The thing in Satellite that I think is very cool is it kind of has this stop-start thing that happens a few times throughout the song, and that's very original to me, and it adds a unique element to the song. It's actually what allows me to differentiate it much more so from Astral Jacket. Otherwise, they would kind of, you know, be like one continuous song in a way. Also, this one again has the very cool dynamic build, and the piano again is adding some really great dimensions to the track. So overall, I like this track, but I agree with you, Jason. The sequencing, this song could have been elsewhere and been a little more successful on the record, a little more stand out on its own.
Two mellow, spacey tunes in a row. It's probably a little much to ask. I do like how it fades in on the piano and then changes gears into the electric. So musician-wise, this is a song we got all three guys back on electric guitar. Britt's on electric guitar, Alex, Gerardo, all playing electric guitar. Ben's back on bass after a break for a while. And then the piano work and the keyboard work is all done by Alex as well. So he's on electric and he's on the piano work. I think his piano work here is fantastic. And I really think that the vocal delivery is also very good. I think, that line, I know I love you more, and he just keeps building and it increases in intensity as it goes through the song. At 2:05, we have another one of those weird affected guitar solos. Oh, I love you more. which I don't know which guy plays it. There's in both the songs that happens, there's three guys on electric guitar. So I don't know which one does it. So sorry, I can't give you your credit. I do like how the vocal just continues to build in intensity. To me, this song is the far superior song than Astro Jacket. And I probably would appreciate Astro Jacket more if I didn't know this song was coming next. I look forward to this song and sort of have to not suffer through Astro Jacket. That's not fair, but like, I know the next song is going to be a similar song that I like better. So it takes away from Astro Jacket. So that's where it gets for me. But I do think this is a good song. They do a very good job with this sort of slow groove, atmospheric type of song. I think they did a good job here. So that brings us to the last track, which is called Lucifer on the Sofa, the title track.
Lucifer on the Sofa is the track that most sounds like the band's previous record, Hot Thoughts. And there's a good reason for that, because this is the track that they actually enlisted the producer from that album to work on with them. So it's the one that has the most, for lack of a better term, more electronic elements to it. I think it's an interesting start to this song. It's kind of a horn sounding thing. It's almost like, did I happen onto an Enya song or something, like as it's first starting out? And then as you get into it, I like this song builds. I think it's a cool closer because it kind of winds the album down. Like some albums can end on a real up-tempo high note, and some albums I think are better suited to wind down. And that's kind of, if you take away side one, side two from this record and just listen to it as one continuous piece, it's up tempo, it starts slow, gets up tempo, and then it kind of winds back down. And I think Lucifer on the Sofa serves the purpose as being a really great closing track in that respect.
TRIPPY. Shit gets weird here, and we're talking to the devil sitting on our couch having a smoke. What did we smoke to get here? And can I have some, please? Because I feel I may appreciate the song more. We got some horns and organs, so that's interesting. I feel like the band, though, had a pile of unfinished lyrics just sitting around and kind of threw them into the stovetop pot together. Stew. I don't like stew. Number 188 on the Japanese albums chart.
Lucifer on Sofa. Spacey intro. Falls right into the groove. The drumming on this, I think, is amazing. I love all the little nuanced fills that are in there. I didn't make a spreadsheet, but I did pay attention to all the different little unique fills that were in there. But each time it's a little different, which I think is great. We want it to be repetitive. So to make a really good, spacey, sort of shoegazy sounding song, you want it to be repetitive enough where you can fall into the sort of spacey groove, but different enough that it doesn't become boring. And I think they do it. Excellent job on this song of doing that. The vocal delivery, how, again, going back to how when he says certain words, how it aligns with where the kick and the snare are, that's what adds to that element of being able to sort of lose yourself in the vibe. The backing keys are amazing. The highlight that Ian mentioned is the saxophone. Ted DeFaro, whoever you are, Ted DeFaro on the saxophone, love all of the little long spacey notes he adds to accent stuff in there. I like how it alternates back and forth between all the harmonized vocals. Again, I think it's just multiple Brits. Although this, you do have Caroline Rose back on backing vocals. So you do hear a female vocal in there harmonizing with the multiple Brits, which I think is awesome. And then, but then it'll drop out and it'll be just his voice again for a little bit. And then the harmony vocals will come back in. I feel like that the way that it cycles through the parts and changes up, as I mentioned, adds a lot of dynamic to this. There's no guitar on this track. So here we are on a rock record review podcast talking about a song, no guitar on this track. Ben is on bass guitar, but then it's primarily Alex that's playing all the keyboard and piano parts, and then Britt is on the mellotron in this. No guitars. And I think how they use all those elements, going back to like sort of the electronica element of this band, if that was a piece. 356, when the music cuts out and they do the humming.
All your own records. Yes, and all your own cassettes.
Really dig that. I think that is super cool. And then when it comes to the end, it's sort of all that spaciness sort of drops out, and then it's really clean at the end, which seems like a very intentional way to kind of draw the album to a close. For me, this is my favorite song on the record. I love the frick out of this song. I can listen to this song over and over and over, and I just get lost into it. I don't know what the lyrics are. I'm admittedly not a great lyric guy, but I can easily sort of sing or hum along to it the way it works over the groove. And so I love this track. I think it's the best one on the record. So now that the track by track is done, we'll give our final thoughts and album ratings. For our listeners, our album rating is a 0 to 5 scale, in which 5 is a favorite of ours, and a 0 gets given to Lucifer to take from the sofa down to, you know where Lucifer comes from.
I mean, it's no secret. I've said it right from the start of this episode. I think this is a fantastic record. And still, you know, from February of 22 to right to this, up to doing this episode, I listen to this on the regular. I think this album is a 4.5, hands down.
Well, all in all, this album starts off great and keeps my interest for most of the way through. These kinds of records and the chance to review them and expose myself to something new is the main reason I like doing this show. Forces me to branch out a bit and listen to new things. I was at a show last week for the Steepwater Band, and funny enough, I got into a conversation with another guy there, and the Spoon and the Revivalists came up. All signs that I can and should check out these guys more. For as much as I poo-pooed on the last few songs there of the album, overall, it was a good album for me overall. Not Deserted Island good, but good. A solid 3. Also, spot number 100 on the French physical albums chart. I want to know what the physical part of French physical albums is in that list, and if there's a different French list. I don't know. These are things that intrigue me. I gave it a 3.
When I first started listening to this record, I was right away struck by the shoegaziness, for lack of a better word. Even though it's not a big guitar effect heavy type of record, but it's got that spaciness, that sort of atmospheric has come up a lot of times. There's a lot of elements to this record that really fits in my wheelhouse. And then it's super groove heavy with a lot of great melodies. And the biggest thing I struggle with is when I listen to this in a vacuum. If I put this on, I'm driving in my car, I put it in my headphones, I'm doing the dishes, I really enjoy this record front to back. Really do. Then I put on a different record, and I'm not going to reveal it because we're going to review it later, but there's another record we're going to view coming up, which has a similar style, but it's from a bigger, more well-known band. And when I listen to that record, I'm struck by how much better it is. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's how you really do it. So in the moment when I listen to this record, it's a solid 3.75. I don't know if I can give it a 4, but it's certainly it's on the top end. It's a super enjoyable listen. I really enjoy listening to this record. But then when I throw on, again, like I mentioned, like another record of a similar style from a bigger band who kind of knows more what they're doing, I realize it's not as good as I think it is in the moment. So I'm going to stick with 3.75. Listeners, do yourself a favor. Just throw it on and give it a listen. It's 10 tracks. It's what, like 30 something minutes. It doesn't hurt you to throw it on and listen to it. And it's fun. It's a fun listen and it's enjoyable for what it is. So I'm really glad that I got exposed to it and I got to listen to it. So, all right. I think that'll do it for our review for today. For Ridiculous Rock Record Reviews, I've been Jason Donsis.
I'm Ian Rice.
On Hillman.
Loki.
Yeah.
See ya.
The Ridiculous Rock Records Review Podcast is hosted by Jason Donsis, David Hudson, Sean Hillman, and Ian Rice. Show produced and directed by Jason Donsis. Logo by David Hall. Theme music from the Steepwater Band. Find them online at steepwater.com. If you have questions, comments, feedback, or ideas for the show, or just want to connect, find us on your favorite social media platform at R4Podcaster, or email us at ridiculousrockrecords@gmail.com. The R4 Podcast was created by Aaron Martell. Thank you for dropping the needle with us. Until next time, rock on.
I'm distracted because I just see David's doing live Instagram right now as we're trying to do this.
Listen, you have the good half here. Okay.
I know. I'm focused. I got it. I ignored it.
I'm loyal, Ian. Don't mind him. Oh, he's gone. Yes.
Damn it. I thought he was just really intently listening to you.
I know. I got suspicious when he stayed that focused for that long on me. I don't command attention like that.
Oh, Jason's back. Hi, Jason.
All right. I think my internet just dropped out. That was weird.
Don't worry.
Dude, you totally you were about to start laying down your thing about the track and nothing.
Nothing. All right.
Well, just so you know where it cut off.
Okay.
Well, I'll start over. Where did you hear me leave off? Did I get all?
I heard you finish. Yeah. I heard you. Ooh. You were. Yeah.
A little personal. Off.
That's some bullshit. That's. I heard you. Come to the conclusion.
He said, come. This is a shambles tonight.
riveting radio.
This is good thing we're not live.
Don't you guys ever do a live show?
This is why.
And you'll know.
Exactly.
Oh, he's back quick this time.
I do not understand. What the hell? Again, this is my first one with this new computer. So,
Jason, just breathe with me. Take a deep breath in. When I'm the voice of reason.
Oh, the effrontery that you have being the voice of reason.
Effrontery.